Broadcasting live from Chicago. I'm having internet problems at the start of the show, at the beginning of the show. I can't believe it. I cannot believe this, but it could be happening. Let me see. Let me try something else. Yeah.
A lot of people I know think of Jehovah's Witnesses as nothing more than the religious people who sometimes knock on your door because they want to talk to you about God. And that's true. That is something they do. But they don't really know anything about Jehovah's Witnesses' beliefs. So let's fix that right now. Jehovah's Witnesses do not accept blood transfusions. Ever. Imagine you're in a car accident and you get taken to the hospital. They need to give you a blood transfusion so you can live. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, you will say no to that. Even worse, they won't allow their children to accept the transfusions. This prohibition has led to reports of Jehovah's Witnesses and their kids dying more times than I can remember. So why is this a rule? Like, where did this even come from? Jewish law forbade eating blood. And the New Testament in Acts chapter 15, verses 28-29, carried that command over into Christianity. By the way, that same passage also tells you you must avoid eating meat from animals that were strangled to death. Now, obviously, most Jews will accept blood transfusions because they understand that eating blood and getting a medical blood transfusion to save your life are completely different things. But Jehovah's Witnesses don't feel that way. They are both one and the same, even if it means saving your life. If you commit what the church views as a serious sin, and a group of church elders finds you unrepentant, you will be disfellowshipped. Not just kicked out of the church, but disfellowshipped, which means no one in the church can ever talk to you ever again. By the way, that could include your family. I know former Jehovah's Witnesses who haven't spoken to their parents in years because of this rule. Basically, if you're disfellowshipped, your family could talk to you about non-church-related things, like how their grandkids are doing or something. But that's it. And when those family members are heavily invested in the church, there really isn't much stuff that's non-church-related that they can talk to you about. So once you're in the church, leaving it basically means saying goodbye to your entire life as you knew it. By the way, what are some of the serious sins that could get you disfellowshipped? Getting a blood transfusion, going to another church, using tobacco, homosexual activity, or openly disagreeing with church leadership. Oh, and not believing in God. They believe the world's ending soon, and only they will be saved. The Watchtower Society, which governs the faith, says that Jesus began ruling over earth from heaven in 1914. October 5th or 6th, to be more precise. They believe that Armageddon is happening soon, and that only those who accept Jehovah's Witness teachings will be saved. Of course, they also said all this about 1914, 1925, and 1975. So their track record for predicting the end of the world isn't very good. Oh, and in case you're wondering, there are about 8 million people who are witnesses and like 7 billion who are not. So odds are you're screwed. Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate their birthdays. Why? Well, for one, they think the day of your death is way more important than the day that you were born. So who cares? Also,
all right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. They're doing some construction next door, and I hope it doesn't interfere with the broadcast, but it more likely it will. So be on board for that. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm trying to be live. I'm trying to sound a little like everything is okay. It's raining in Chicago. It is raining as I sit in my studio near the lake on the north side of Chicago. Okay, as I've been told that there were two people shot near the school in my community, which is the community of Edgewater in the city of Chicago, a pretty pleasant and upscale community. Not saying that I'm upscaled, but it's a pretty upscale community. I mean, we have the Loyola University. It's right down the street from me, about one block away. So a lot of young kids come in and out of the community of the area. And, yeah, the gangs, I mean, they are preying on these young girls because they're trying to get these young girls to work the streets for them. So the young girls have to be vigilant. And we do have police protection over here. We have the Loyola police. We have the Chicago police. And there's also security officers walking the streets to try to make sure that the kids are safe going to the university, the school. And also, so we have to be vigilant because the young thugs are out there to do wrong. And that's not right because one young lady from the University of Loyola was shot in the back. The George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting from Chicago, if I can get that right. Okay, author Captain Dan Willis with TV personality and all that kind of stuff. He will be on the show today. He's a part of the First Responders. Okay, Dan Willis is a former homicide investigator and SWAT commander who has developed a wellness programs and specialized in providing emotional survival and wellness training to first responders throughout the country. He is a graduate of San Diego State. San Diego, California. His website, blah, 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 blah. We'll get to that once he comes onto the show. Has links to past interviews, including Good Morning America, okay, MSNBC, Fox News, and a into the show and give us some of his expert advice. His new book is, at least one of his books is called, I think, let me see, Bulletproof Spirit. It's a long title. I'm just reading those two first words of the title, Bulletproof Spirit. And if the rest of the title is, let me see, Bulletproof Spirit. Let's see if we can. Okay, Bulletproof Spirit, the First Responders Essential Resource to Protecting and Healing the Mind and Heart. I knew it was something about this guy, the reason why I wanted him on the show. I asked him to be on the show, and he accepted. Okay. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. My number is 347. If you want to call in and talk to Dan Willis, I mean, this guy should have a whole bunch of things to say. I mean, he really should. And I'm proud to have someone like that on my show. Makes my show seem almost legitimate. Dan Willis would be on the show, First Responders. He's been all over the place, TV-wise, and that's great. That's wonderful. It's wonderful when people have a talent and a skill, and they share it, want to share it with the world and the place. That is just awesome. And that is the kind of thing that I want on my show. People coming on my show to want to help to try to make the world a better place. Lord knows we need it. It needs to be done. You know, so I've got guests for the entire week, I believe, until the 28th. I'm going to try to book somebody for that. I'm also booking guests. +1-762, that's fine too. But guests on this show will always try to inform my audience, to make my audience a little bit more knowledgeable than they were before they tune into the show. Try to make the world a better place. And that's what it's all about, trying to make, at least giving, doing your part, no matter how little you know. Don't ever think you don't know enough, because there's somebody out there that don't even know that much of what you know. You never know. Always share and what you know to try to make the world a better place, even if it make another person a better person than what they used to be until they heard you and your divine intervention into their lives to make their lives a little bit better. Because there's so many people out here, man, I'm telling you, poverty is rampant. Poverty is it's monumental, if I can use that word to describe people suffering, people going through all kinds of crap through no fault of their own. People are trying to do better with their lives, but there's always something that's pulling them down, holding them back. People who, with a great amount of talent among them, but they just can't seem to get their foot in the door to let people know, other people know, who can probably help them about that talent. You know, so it's great to help people. It, young, old, you know, indifferent, whatever. People are out here struggling, and we got politicians. I hate to get into politicians. There's politicians out here talking about war on poverty, but then war on poor people. I don't know. Poverty is the thing. We are living in the richest country in the world, and yet we have so many people on food stamps. We have so many people who are homeless. We have so many people who do not have an education. We have so many people working in damn jobs that do not pay them enough to buy a house or buy a car or buy enough food to put on the table. That's ridiculous. The richest damn country, I mean, the richest country in the world. And we have people like this. We can't even, there are so many countries in the world, free health care, free college. We are behind the eight ball in this. There's a lot of countries in the world that are worse off than the United States. There's no doubt about that. You know, you give and you take. There's no doubt about that. But the United States, we have to continue to lead. And we're falling behind as far as I'm concerned. You know, so it's never ending. Ending because every time I come on the show, there's somebody walking up to me or calling me, George, blah, 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 blah. I wish I could do everything I can, but we have to work collectively to make this. I can go out and help one person, but that one person is just one person out of a million or a zillion people who are in that position that need help. So that's why I try to have people on this show. And I'm hoping that the show gets out so people can listen. There's a zillion radio shows out there, especially internet radio shows. And so many people have so many choices of what they want to listen to and how they want to listen and when they want to listen. I've always said on this show that I am a what? Needle in a haystack. But I don't mind being a needle in a haystack. You know what I'm saying? I don't mind being a needle in a haystack. As long as I know there's people listening. I know there's people podcasting. I know there's people who are interested in the show. I know there's people who are telling other people about this show. I know all of that. And that's why I try to have people on my show, the George Wilder Jr. Show, that's going to be informative, knowledgeable about whatever they're doing so they can help you out or someone that you know out. That's what it's all about. That's why I have Dan Willis on the show today. And that's why I will have Judy Flicker on the show tomorrow. Tuesday, I'm going to have Jennifer Cummings. And I would like to thank everybody who has appeared on my show in the last 2 or 3 weeks because I was all booked up for February. Okay. On the 28th, there's no one booked on the 28th. We'll see what we can do about that. If not, then, you know, hey, we'll just go with the flow or whatever happens. Whatever happens. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of Chicago. Follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Amazon.com, and everything. I was on Facebook earlier today, and I was posting a short story that I've written called Rain, Get Off My Window. And I was stunned at the responses to the book, I mean to the short story, or you can call it a book. It's published anyway. It's on Amazon. It's called Rain, Get Off My Window, among a lot of other things that I've written. And I was was taken by the response. People are sharing it online. People are pushing it. And it's just a short story. And I've been invited on a couple of talk shows to talk about it. And I didn't know that it was take off. Like, I really I did, because I post so much stuff up there. And when something takes off, I got to talk about it because it doesn't happen a lot, right? And I'm getting a really good buzz from it. I'm getting a really good vibe from it. It's about me and some of my you can almost say it's a semi-autobiography or semi-memoir of some of the things I've gone through, some of the challenges through with my son and with myself, my son, and, you know, it's pretty good. Check it out. It's called, I keep saying, I don't know. I'm just so used to saying it. But check it out. It's on Amazon.com, www.amazon.com/author/G Wilder. Or just put my name up there in the text bar and push enter. It should come up. All right, we're listening. We're waiting for Dan Willis. I've had doctors on the show too, and they have been great and marvelous. I love doing the show. I'm paying for it. It's costing me. You know, so, and I'm waiting for it to pay dividends. And I think it will. I think it will be paying plenty of dividends. I love what I'm doing, like what I'm doing too, because I'm doing it for you. And I'm also doing it for myself, you know. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I will be right back. We're going to play a short bit of Martin Luther King. Thank you.
April the 4th, 1968, Memphis, Tennessee, 6:15 p.m. U.S. civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King is rushed to hospital after being shot. He's badly wounded. At the time, King is a towering figure, known throughout the world for his inspired direction of the U.S. civil rights movement. But in his high-profile fight to win more rights for America's black community, especially in the Deep South, King has also earned the undying hatred of a cabal of violent white extremists who despise him and all he stands for. They see him as a threat to their way of life. They want him out of the way. But would they go so far as trying to get him killed? April the 3rd, 1968, Atlanta, mid-morning. King flies to Memphis and checks into the Lorraine Motel. He's come to lend his support to a group of black city sanitation workers. He's been behind them since February, when they went on strike demanding better pay and conditions. Now King is determined to get them a good deal. That evening, King heads for the Mason Temple, where he gives a typically powerful, yet strangely prophetic, address.
Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
It will become one of King's most famous speeches. but it sounds almost as if he'd received a death threat. The son of a preacher, Martin Luther King Jr., was born in Atlanta, Georgia, on January the 15th, 1929. By the time he's 24, King is himself a preacher, working at a Baptist church in Montgomery, Alabama. 2 years later, Montgomery would become known throughout the world when, on December the 1st, 1955, Rosa Parks, a 42-year-old black seamstress, refuses to give up her seat on a bus to a white man. Under what are known at the time as Jim Crow laws, she's arrested, charged, and eventually fined $10 with $4 costs. This case causes outrage, not just in the southern states, but throughout the country's entire black community. And in Montgomery itself, King decides that his people have been pushed around enough, the Rosa Parks incident being the latest in a long line of similar humiliations and violence. He organizes what becomes known as the Montgomery Bus Boycott. It will last 13 months, during which time black people steadfastly...
We do a lot of stories on family, and we know families with love...
All right, we're back. We're back. Thank you for staying with me. That was a little clip of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And there is no doubt about it. There is no doubt about it. Everybody... hated it and didn't like it very much when Martin Luther King was shot. There's no doubt about it. I've had people come to me, and even I've questioned myself sometimes, was Martin Luther King the greatest black leader that has ever been? I would say he's probably one of the greatest black leaders that has ever been. He cared about his people. He loved his people. He tried to help his people. He tried to defend his people in every way against violence. He would say things like, you know, when someone approaches you in a violent way, you turn the other cheek. Now, I've always had a problem with that. maybe it's my makeup, maybe it's my DNA, but I never could stand by and let someone slap me and not slap them back. I've grown up to know that. That was one of my biggest pet peeves with Martin Luther King. I didn't want to see people just stand there and get their ass kicked. Just stand there. I mean, you want to see people try to defend themselves, even if it's racial and totally wrong. You don't want to see nobody, you know, get their asses killed and hung by the nearest tree because of their color. If you fight back, you may survive. If you don't fight back, you're not going to survive at all. So I had a problem with that. Then I discovered Malcolm X. Malcolm X, to me, is the ultimate black leader. I'm not putting Martin Luther King down. I love what he did. I think what he did was needed, and it was important. But Malcolm X was it. Malcolm X would stand up there and say, call the white man devil. Malcolm X would say what he thought. He was just as popular as Martin Luther King. The irony is that they both were assassinated, okay? But one of the things I dug that I loved about Malcolm X was that he would say, do not turn the other cheek. Someone hits you, you hit them back. You know, do not stand there. And that's where him and Martin Luther King differed. They actually met one another. And they acknowledged their differences. They didn't hate each other. They just acknowledged their differences. And for me, it's always will be Malcolm X as probably one of the greatest black leaders that ever donned this earth. He was assassinated. He was, one of the greatest books. A lot of people criticize the guy who wrote the book, Alex Haley, the guy who wrote the book Roots. They criticize him for plagiarism of that book, Roots. But he also wrote an autobiography on Malcolm X, whereas Malcolm X told him the story. They were in a room together. Malcolm was talking and Alex Haley was writing. And it's called, the book is called Malcolm X by Alex Haley, the author of Roots. I've read that book through and through. It is one of the awesome books. The book itself inspired Spike Lee to do the movie Malcolm X. The book was Malcolm X speaking. Have you ever heard him speak on television at a rally? It's nothing like hearing him speak in that particular paperback book that I once possessed. I think I still have it. It is an awesome book. After reading that book, I was hooked. I said, this is the guy I'm going to emulate. This is the guy I'm going to follow. Even though soon after he had written that book, Malcolm X was assassinated. Some say by someone in his own group. Malcolm was a Muslim. He was a Muslim. He wanted out, and they didn't like that. You know, they felt that Malcolm was getting too big. And if I had someone to lay my hat on, it would probably be Malcolm X, because he was one of the greatest. Not putting Martin Luther King down, no way. But if I had my, way of saying it, it would be probably Malcolm X. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm all over the place, everywhere. Okay, let's go to the phones. All righty. You're now on the air. You're on the jar, George Wilder Jr., so if I can say it. Hi. Anybody? You're on the show. Okay, if you can get yourself together, call back. All righty, here we go. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We'll be right back, folks. Right back. Let's see if we can get this up.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. This is the Talk of Our Times. Let's talk, everybody. Broadcasting from Chicago. This is the Talk of Our Times. All right. Thank you. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. And I was just talking about, let's see. Okay. Let's go back to the phones. You on the air?
This was Dan Willis that was calling in.
All right, Dan. Okay, I was expecting you. All right. Okay, let me do this right quick. Okay, let's see. You have a bio. I want to read it. Dan Willis is a former homicide investigator and SWAT commander who has developed wellness programs and specializes in providing emotional survival and wellness training first responders throughout the country. He is a graduate of San Diego State University and an FBI National and the FBI National Academy. He lives in San Diego, California. His website is, I'll let you tell them that later, has links to past interviews, including Good Morning America, MSNBC, Fox News, and the British Media Production Company. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Hey, George, how are you? Thank you for the opportunity.
No problem, man. I was reading your bio and some of the information that you sent, and I find it totally, totally impressive that you're going to use your experience out there, your experience of what you know, and you're retired from what I'm reading here, and to use your experience to help others out.
Yes, I retired as a police captain after nearly 30 years of service at the La Mesa Police Department, mm-hmm. which is a suburb of San Diego. And during that time, towards the end of my career is when I really began to see how devastating a career as a police officer, first responder, is, not only within myself and my own experiences, but what I saw in so many of my brothers and sisters that I served with who suffered from PTSD, three of them I know of who were close to killing themselves, and all the other emotional issues and trauma that we deal with without any training to try to process it.
Okay, Dan, in case there are some people out there who are listening who don't know, why don't you tell them, I know, but some may not know, why don't you tell them what is a first responder?
Well, a first responder would be your police officers, your firefighters, your paramedics, even hospital trauma workers, military personnel. It's the people on the front lines of mm-hmm. helping us, helping protect and give life mm-hmm. to the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And so often in that dedicated service of serving and protecting others, we lose a large part of our own life and well-being if we're not careful about it. And that was the impetus of me writing Bulletproof Spirit to provide emotional survival and wellness training for people the job won't debilitate them.
Is this your first turn as an author or...?
It is, yes. It took me about 2.5 years to write the book. It's been commercially published, and now I go around the country. I have a 4-hour emotional survival class that I give to police departments and first responder agencies based on the book about the proactive things that they can do to mitigate the negative effects of a life of service.
Okay, before we get into the first question on PTSD, I want you to tell my audience, what is PTSD?
Sure, and most of the audience, I'm sure, thinks of PTSD as affecting the military, but it is a devastating effect with the police as well. Really what PTSD is an injury to your brain's ability to process a traumatic event. It's not a disorder. It's not that something's wrong with you or that you're weak or something. It's all not about what's wrong with you. It's about what happened to you. So once you look at it as an injury to your brain, which it really is, there are some things that you can do to help protect yourself from that and to try to heal from it. But what happens is if that processing ability within your brain gets injured from a traumatic event or from an accumulation of very stressful traumatic incidents, the symptoms that you will experience are devastating. You're not able to get any sleep. When you do, you have nightmares all the time. Throughout your day, you have these intrusive images that keep coming into your mind that you can't stop. Your emotions are completely haywire. You have thoughts of suicide all the time from nowhere, and it is so debilitating to your quality of life. And about 1 in 5 police officers going to work every day have PTSD.
What makes them so susceptible to the depression, PTSD, and the emotional suffering?
Well, a large part of it, George, is the vast majority of first responders are driven by their heart, are very compassionate, good people, to want to help, protect, and give life to people. And it's that compassion, that willing to self-sacrifice and serve, makes them susceptible to the negative effects of continually, day after day, constantly seeing the worst in human nature and seeing
people in so much violence and suffering
with your victims and just the danger, constantly being hypervigilant because we go to work every day knowing at any given moment there's people out there that will kill us if they get the chance. And that has a really devastating effect on us.
I can imagine a police officer, a firefighter, you know, going out on a call and thinking to themselves that they may not come back.
You know that's one thing. When I talk to just your average citizens, I always try to point out is that when a police officer leaves for work in the morning, he's thinking of something different than every other person in our society who goes to work. When I kissed my wife to go off to work, the only thing I was thinking of is I hope I get to see you and the kids again. And nobody else thinks that when they go off to their normal job. And it's a reality that the general public, I don't think, really understands that there are people that will kill us if they give the opportunity. And we have to constantly be on guard and be alert and live with that. Unfortunately, even more so today.
Yeah, but I think sometimes
when I was working.
I think today, even in today's society, with all the carnage, murders, killings, homicides, even the average citizen is probably afraid to go outside to the corner store. You know, so. You never know if you're going to make it back
certainly
from the corner
in some communities and neighborhood, you're absolutely right. But imagine being a police officer or a firefighter who goes into those communities constantly, and with some people, all you are is a target, and not only the physical danger, but the officers also deal with the false complaints. I did internal affairs investigations for years at my agency, and probably about 70% of the allegations against officers alleging misconduct were false, were made up. And those kinds of things are devastating to the officer, too, even though they know they didn't do anything. To have to live through an investigation and thinking, well, what if they think I really did do it and could lose their career or get sued and everything. All that plays into us developing symptoms of potentially PTSD, but certainly of being cynical, being frustrated, being angry, being depressed. And it's in everyone's best interest to have a good, healthy officer, because when you call the cops and need help, you don't want someone showing up who's had 2 hours of sleep consistently. You don't want someone who is an alcoholic or someone who is depressed or suicidal. You need an officer who is all there. Yeah. And it can do everything within their power to help you and protect you.
Yeah.
So really, the whole issue of emotional survival affects everybody in our communities.
Okay. What are some of the warning signs that a first responder is in some sort of danger?
Well, one of the first things is sleep. Is your sleep starts to get affected? There's been studies that show police officers, on average, get 4 hours of sleep a night consistently, and you need 8 or 9. So you really can't function, especially long-term, with only getting 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and that affects everything about the quality of our lives and our ability to do our job professionally is being able to get good sleep. Another thing that will start to show when stress is becoming too overwhelming we get angry all the time. It's like we're just below that point of flying off the handle, and any little thing will make us get just very, very angry and upset when before something like that would never even bother us. Another red flag would be depression, when you really were never depressed before. Maybe drinking more and more, to where now you're drinking as a need instead of you're just out to have a good time. You drink because you have to fall asleep, because you have to deal with your spouse or the kids, or you have to relax. And that's a major problem. And the most significant red flag that something's going on with you that you're not processing stress or trauma is what happened with me is being what I call emotionally dead. You lose a sense to feel. You're not able to feel you know, happy or sad or connected to the close people in your life. And when you start becoming emotionally dead inside, then that's going to be a real serious problem.
Yeah, I would think violence would probably fit in there too somewhere. I mean,
yeah, that probably goes along with the anger, and you know, and maybe you start reacting to things violently along with that anger that was never a part of your makeup before, and that's just kind of your inside screaming that something's not right. You know, you need help. You're not processing things in a constructive, positive way.
Yeah. What are some of the what are the top three things family members can do to offer support and care?
Well, one of the most important things family members or first responders can do is provide a home that the officer looks forward to coming home to. Because if a police officer knows that as soon as he gets home, he's going to get in a fight about why he's never at home, why he's always working overtime, why he's never there on holidays, and this. And I mean, cops can find all kinds of other things to do besides coming home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's always overtime. They can go out drinking with everyone. They can do all kinds of stuff. But if their family works together to provide that supportive, loving home that we look forward to and we're thinking about all day long, that is going to go a long, long way to support us and provide us that emotional stability and a way to survive this career. Another thing they can do is spouses really need to give us positive feedback about what's going on with us, because some of these things that happen to your spirit as you're going through this career and the job is taking away a part of your life, it's little by little. It's kind of like a cancer of your spirit, and you don't really know it, but everyone around you will. And if your spouse can say, hey, what's going on with you? You're not yourself. What's happening? And can let us know so we can take a look at ourselves. Only then are we going to be able to address some of the issues and find ways to kind of heal and process things. So they really need to be our sounding board and that feedback for us to kind of know how we're doing and what's going on.
Yeah, when you say life-altering addiction, what do you mean, life-altering addiction?
Well, there's about just some of the stats, and I'll get to that. You know, suicide is the number one cause of death for police officers.
Mm-hmm.
It is about 1 in 5 cops have PTSD, and about 20% of officers will have a serious addiction at some point during their career. And that could be a problem drinker. Officers are twice as likely to be a problem drinker than the general public. It could be prescription drugs or gambling or any addiction that alters your ability to work and live your life in a healthy, positive, constructive way. And that 20% figure is about double of the general public. So you can see that our officers out there are really suffering from not knowing how to deal with the negative effects of police work. And that was the whole purpose of my book, to try to give them the tools to do this job as professionally, as compassionately as they can, and to be well throughout their whole career.
Basically, what you're saying, police officers are just as human as anybody else.
I'm glad you said that, George, because that's the point I always try to make is even cops themselves think of themselves as the supermen and superwomen of law enforcement. And the public kind of looks at us like that, and we're not. And that's what really makes us susceptible to suffer as well, is we're not robots. And part of being human is we have emotions. And we have feelings, and we try to hide them and try not to let things, you know, bother us because we see so many horrible, terrible things. That's when we start to be not human, and that's when we get into trouble. I mean, we fear, we suffer, and we bleed just like everybody else.
Just like anybody else.
Absolutely. Yes. And if we don't recognize that, then we're really going to suffer throughout our career.
Wow.
And
I mean,
it's okay.
Really,
it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to suffer and to bleed. You just recognize that, and if you need help, you go and you get help. Cops are human just like everyone else.
Do you think police officers, first responders, before they even go out on their job, they could probably come back tainted in some sort of way with PTSD? Do you think they, before they even, you know, realize they have it, do they actually feel that they may acquire it?
Well, a lot of these things that we're discussing happens, and it even though they could be built up over a long time, maybe even years, it kind of sneaks up on
okay.
the officer.
Oh, so
they really don't realize. Yeah, they don't realize what's going on with them. I mean, they just know, hey, you know, what happened? I can't sleep anymore. Why do I keep having these dead people images in my head constantly coming into my mind? Why do I get these panic attacks constantly and I can't breathe? You know, what's wrong with me? And I'm losing my mind. And I mean, they'll have those kind of thoughts, but they won't make the connection that it's because of the job. It's because of what you've experienced year after year. And there's help for you if you have the courage to get help. I mean, if your arm was hurting you, you'd go to the doctor. If your heart, your mind, your spirit is suffering, you're in more help of assistance than when your physical body hurts. And, you know, I just always say we lose almost 200 officers to suicide every year. I bet the vast majority of them weren't getting help, and now they can't because they're dead.
Oh, man. All right, Captain Dan Willis on the George Wilder Jr. Show, talking first responders. I'm pretty sure I've learned a lot. I'm pretty sure my audience have learned a lot, those who will podcast and download the show and listen live. Tell us about your book. I mean, tell us, where can we find your book if we were going to, you know, look for it? Where can we find it? Amazon? Or?
Sure. The book is called Bulletproof Spirit, and the best way to get it, either a hard copy or just to download it on a Kindle or something, is to go to firstresponderwellness.com.
Kindle, okay.
And there'll be links on the lower left of that first page at First Responder Wellness that will hook you up.
Okay, a website? Blog?
The website, www.firstresponderwellness.com.
Thanks for being on the show, Dan Willis. Thank you so much for being on the show.
George, I appreciate it. Thank you again. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Dan Willis on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you guys listen to that, and we've learned a lot on that. I will be right back. Stay with me. Let's see if we can hook something up right quick. All right, be right back. Thank you. We're back on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And let me. Oh, we still. Okay, we still got it. I just put my earphones on, folks. So thanks to I'm always saying doctor. What am I talking about? Captain Dan Willis. And he was just great. He was marvelous. And I hope you learned a lot about first responders, because I sure did. I mean, this is what I said, what I continue to say. I want people on the show who are smart, bright, and intelligent, who has something to offer my audience. And you've just heard a little of that. Okay, thanks to Dan William Willis for being on the George Wilder Jr. Show, a former homicide investigator and SWAT commander. Big people. All right, you are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Amazon.com. Okay. We just have, let's move right along. We just have to get to the budget stalemate in Illinois. And it looks like there is no amount. Oh, man, this is terrible. This is crazy. There is no budget in place. We're going into the seventh, maybe eighth month. The eighth month in Illinois without a budget. And Bruce Rauner, all he has to do is sign a budget, and the schools will be funded. The social programs will be funded. The crucial ones will be funded. The crucial ones. I'm hearing now that a lot of people are being laid off. A lot of these agencies are closing. A lot of the funding is going to stop regardless of court orders. If there's no money to pay, there's no way you can make them pay if they don't have money to pay it. It is just awful. And Bruce Rauner, all he's doing is blaming other people. Of course, the legislature, John Cullerton, Michael Madigan, they're blaming Bruce Rauner. So everybody's blaming each other, but we know who the real culprit is. The culprit to why this state doesn't have a budget is no doubt Governor Bruce Rauner, because all he has to do is just sign a budget. That's budgets are on his desk right now. He won't sign them. Because why? I keep saying this in every damn show that I do. Why? Because he wants to break the backs of big unions. He's saying, if you want a budget for Illinois, then you better give me all of those damn unions. I want the unions. I want to break the backs of those unions. And Michael Madigan is saying, hell no, we're not going to give you the unions. Okay, so you're going to give me the unions, so I'm going to destroy Illinois. That's basically it. That's it in a nutshell. That's it in a nutshell. And Illinois has gone down the tubes. It's not going down the tubes. It already has gone down the tubes. It has fell off the cliff. It's not falling off the cliff. It has fell. It tumbled over off the cliff. And these guys are just going to let it stay there. You know, we got some stinking-ass politicians in Illinois, rotten to the damn core. They think nothing about people that they're hurting. They don't give a damn. It's their own selfishness and their own BS and their own parties. The hell with the people who are going to be suffering because of this. Autism, disability, mental health. People who are working long hours but can't even buy a month's worth of groceries. People who are living in shelters and working because they can't afford to pay these high-ass rents on these apartments that's just going to get higher. We're living in the richest country in the world, and we can't do for our people. It's a damn shame. Because you know why we can't do for them? Because it's all political. Everybody's it's politicizing everything. And the state has mismanaged its finances to the core. Who has mismanaged the finances? Politicians have ruined every damn thing. My 16-year-old son could probably run this state better than Bruce Rauner or some of them guys in the legislature. A bunch of assholes, a bunch of them. They're letting the state run its course. Okay, people are saying, but the legislature has a Democratic majority. Yeah, you're right. Can't they just override anything Rauner wants to do? Can't they just write their own budget? Yes, they could. But Rauner has bought off some politicians on the Democratic side of the aisle. So therefore, they don't have the votes. Remember what I said in previous shows? Rauner buys politicians, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, he buys them. So he doesn't that he hasn't got the power. So he's going to pick off Democratic politicians to vote the way he wants them to vote on his side and not the way the Democrats. That's why they don't have an override-proof majority in the General Assembly legislature. A lot of the Democrats will vote with the Republican. He doesn't have the votes to override or to get a budget because assholes, Republicans, turncoat Democrats, turncoat Democrats will vote for the other side, which will stop the Democratic majority of getting a budget for the state of Illinois. Rauner is trying to buy everything with his money. He's buying everything with his money. And those Democrats, which Durkin, okay, we know who they are, who are being bought off by Michael Madigan. We know who they are. And they and you know what? There are people lining up to run for their jobs. This Durkin guy who voted with Rauner, the Democrat who broke with the Democrats to vote with a Republican, his ass is out of there. We have got people to run against him to take his job because he is not doing it. Now, as I speak, he's still voting with Bruce Rauner. This is why the Democrats cannot override much of what Rauner does, because in their own ranks, they can't. This is why Democrats lose. They lose all the time because they can't keep it together. They can't get it together. They can't stand each other. A little power goes to too many people's heads. They abuse the little power that they have. They, when you in this town, in the city of Chicago, when you voted in as a Democrat, Democrats expect you to vote lockstep in with the rest of the Democrats. They don't expect you to break off and go side with the Republicans who are cutting all the programs, who are taking away everything, who are lying all the time, who are just crazy, you know, so that's the problem. That's the reason why they can't override Rauner, because of defections on the Democratic side of the aisle. And that's a damn shame. And all of those, like I just got through saying, all those guys and girls who are Democrats but voting with Rauner because he has the money, they will have their asses out of office come November 2016 because there are people, smart people, intelligent people, bright people, hopefully real Democrats to take their place, who is going to vote lockstep with everybody so we can, with the Democrats, so we can override a lot of the things that Rauner is doing. Rauner is not doing this by himself. He's bought off some Democrats that are helping him do this. See, if he didn't buy those Democrats off, if they voted lockstep with Democrats, we would have a budget because everything would just be overwritten by Rauner. One of the things Rauner has to understand is that there are three branches of government. He is not – his branch, which is the executive branch, is just one form of government. He has to understand that. Okay, you have and the next branch is legislative and obviously the judicial. And each branch, this is the Constitution, they have equal amount of power. And it's because of checks and balances. Rauner doesn't know this. Maybe he should read the Illinois Constitution. Maybe he should read the United States Constitution. He has no power. He wants to be boss. He wants to be king of Illinois. He wants to run Chicago. He wants to run Chicago schools. And he can't do that. They will not let him do that. I hope not. The guy never had an office in his life. This is his first time holding any kind of a governmental office. And on this coming Wednesday, he's going to be giving a State of the State Illinois speech. What the hell is he going to talk about? He hasn't done anything for a year. The only thing that Rauner has done for the entire year that he's been in office, his first year, is talk about and proposing to break unions. That's all he's ever talked about. He hasn't done anything. He's used a lot of his executive authority to try to get things done. But he has done absolutely – I can't wait to hear him speak and how he's going to spin this and lie about what he's done or what he's done or what he has accomplished since his 1 year in office. He has done exactly nothing. So, but he's going to try. He's done nothing. We have no budget. There's no budget for 7 months. And what, if there's no budget, he's not doing his job. Anybody can get in that governor's office and do executive actions. But your actions come, but your real job comes when you're able to work with the legislature to get things done for the people and the state, this state of Illinois. He's done jack. He's done nothing. And I just can't wait to hear his speech because the minute I'm going to, okay, yeah, I'm on the radio on that day. And I'm gonna, right after his speech or even before his speech, I'm going to come on the radio. I'm going to blast him out of the water because what the hell can he say he's done? He's laid off through 70,000 children out into the streets. People were, you got 60,000 state workers that were afraid that they may not get their paychecks. Social programs for the needy and the poor has been zipped, layoffs. He's done jack. He should be fired. He has done absolutely nothing for the state of Illinois. He is a cancer on this state. He is a liability to the state. This state, it should be against the law for him to do what he's doing to this state because he wants to bust unions. The other night, the guy was on television fuming at the – he was fuming at it. He was fuming from the mouth. He wanted to bust unions so badly. He wants to get to these unions. Like, I don't know. I mean, he has a conviction, a dedication to bust unions. He wants unions so bad he could taste them. He wants unions. And he's got the money to buy off politicians to try to get them. He is buying. He bought the office of governor. He bought it. He bought it, giving out the gift cards. Yeah, it was gift cards, giving out gift cards to voters so they can vote for him. And in other ways, he's bought it. Spent all millions and trillions of dollars on television ads. You know, he outspent Pat Quinn. During the time of the election, the campaign, President Obama came in for Pat Quinn. I mean, you had Hillary, you had Bill Clinton coming in, but he still lost. He lost. We got Rauner because people did not vote. They didn't vote. 25% of the people in Illinois voted. The rest of that 75% that didn't vote, that vote went to Rauner. I tell people all the time, when you don't vote, it still counts. It still counts because it's going to count for a Republican. It still counts. It is horrible in Illinois. Financially, it's terrible. And it's being made this way by politicians who are batting the ball back and forth, and saying that it's each other's fault. But we know who it is. It's Rauner. If Quinn had been reelected, this would not be happening. Quinn was not the best governor, but he was nowhere near as worst as this Bruce Rauner. He is evil. He is mean. I've heard people call him the devil. But Rauner knows it. He knows that people are dissatisfied with him. He has a 32% job approval rating. I think it's lower than that. But he doesn't give a damn. He doesn't give two craps about how we feel about him in the state of Illinois. He doesn't care. All he knows that he wants to bust the hell out of unions. He wants to make this a right-to-work state or a right-to-work for less. It's not right-to-work. It's right-to-work for less. Because other states have passed the law, right-to-work laws, and they have lost jobs. That's a right to work is a job killer because basically, like I just said, it's a right to work for less. You have no unions. When you have no union involvement in your workplace, that employer can lower your wages, can fire you at any whim. You have no protections. This is why people want unions. This is why they don't mind, you know, having a little bit taken out of their check every week or every 2 weeks in order to keep that union, to keep that protection. Browner wants to strip that away. He wants to say you don't have to be in a union if you don't want to be in one. But if you want to, you can. This is just horrible. And the reason why I harp a lot on the state of Illinois and no budget is because I live here. I'm a taxpayer. You know, there's people packing up as I speak to leave the state. There's businesses that are packing up as I speak to leave the state. There are businesses from other states and other countries who wanted to come to Illinois but decide, no, the political environment is too toxic. This is really giving Illinois, Chicago, a bad name because we got these corrupt-ass do nothing politicians who want to ruin this state, sit back and just let this damn state fall off a cliff. That's what's happening. They're sitting back, letting this state fall the hell off the damn cliff and blaming each other for it while these assholes go to their elite parties for the rich while the poor is suffering under these assholes. I keep thinking, why does the rich always like to step on the poor when they – I don't understand it. And President Obama, this is his last year in office. I'm going to say this. I know some of you out there may disagree with me, but I'm going to say I don't think he's done jack for African Americans. I don't think he's done jack for race relations. I don't think he's done jack for anything. I just don't think he, and some people calling him a great president. Give me a break. He's not as bad as George Bush, but he's no Abraham Lincoln either. I mean, Obama has stated himself, and you can go back and dig this up, in his last State of the Union message, that he regrets not being able to bring the country together. Remember in Obama's first term as president of the United States, a lot of us who voted for him was really, really dismayed in him because it seemed like he was siding with the Republicans on everything. He was giving at one point he was giving the Republicans Social Security and all of these other entitlement programs, but as John Boehner and the Republicans rejected it for some reason. It was something. Let me move on to the Chicago public schools. There's been a lot of layoffs, but none with the teachers so far. It's been administrative staff, but none with the teachers so far. But they're saying it will be because they're not getting anything from the state. There's no budget. And Ronald's sitting on his butt, enjoying this as people suffer, as people have to scuffle and scrape and struggle. He's sitting on his butt watching it, and he's amused by it. He's totally amused by it. Going to be giving a state of the state message on Wednesday. I hear him on the television right now. And all he's doing is blaming other people because he has done jack. He has done nothing whatsoever for this state. Now he's trying to defend the fact that he's done nothing. He's trying to use certain words, metaphors, and all of this adjectives, trying to defend that he's done nothing. And he's done absolutely nothing for this state but destroy it. And I'm saying to people right now, get up off your ass, get out there, and just throw this guy out of office. Stop letting him take advantage of you and this state. You got to do something. Honey, I have no money, but we have power in numbers. There are so many people out here that are disappointed in Bruce Rauner. We're all disappointed in this guy. But he's not disappointed in himself. He's got people whispering in his ear, hang in there, Bruce Rauner. Don't give up. Don't give in. You want unions? You're going to get them. Ruin the state. Collapse it. And then blame the Democrats. And that's exactly what he's doing, blaming other people for his inactions. He's blaming other people for his inactions. It's a shame. Vote. If you don't do anything else come November, get out there and vote. Because if you don't vote, I've said this 1,000 times, if you don't vote, you're a Republican. Well, I'm not going to vote. Your vote's still going to count because it's going to put the wrong guy in office. Don't let your vote go to the right way, then vote. Vote. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, ranting about Chicago's budget and these slimy politicians that we've got in the state of Illinois who are letting this state just go under. It just, Rauner has cut meals, senior meals. He's cut the senior program. People are being thrown out of work. Things are going to get worse and worse and worse. It's not going to get any better. And I just wish people would do something about it. I really do wish people would do something about it. Don't sit around. Take your state back from these guys. Man. Anything wrong with the clips and the audio here?
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
Let me just say this. While we become outraged with all the violence in Chicago, we've got to connect the dots. It is no coincidence that homicides are up and shootings are up. This weekend, 2 killed, 45 shot this weekend. And all this is going on while the governor has cut all summer employment jobs, and while the governor has ended all anti-violence jobs in this state. It's no coincidence when you're on the street and you're abandoned by the government why violence is up in this city and why violence is up in this state. The governor is a co-conspirator of what's going on right now in the streets of Chicago. We got to make him understand that Illinois is not another business investment of his. Illinois is a state where there's people whose lives are at risk. Don't treat this like some business investment, Bruce. Treat this like there's people who elected you. This is our money. This is tax money. We have a say-so in what happens with this.
How dare this man close the doors on our children? What's the difference in what he's doing now than Bull Connor did back in the day? We're not going to take it, ladies and gentlemen. The governor wants to balance the budget. off of poor people, off of handicapped people, off of the mentally ill. Ladies and gentlemen, he wants to balance the budget off our baby. But guess what? Have you ever heard him talking about telling his corporate people to take a pay cut?
No.
Have you ever heard him talk about reducing some of those corporate loopholes?
No.
Have you ever heard him talking about, okay, we have been in the crisis here in Illinois. It's not the Republicans' fault. It's not the Democrats' fault. It's really the economy. And everybody has not been paying their fair share. There's some boys on LaSalle Street that make billions of billions of dollars. And I'm like the governor, quite frankly. I don't want to raise taxes, but I want everybody to pay their fair share. And they are making some transactions that they're not paying taxes on. So the only thing I'm saying to the governor, make sure that everybody's in, including my baby, and nobody's left out, including your friends. So with that being said, Mr. Governor, let us go back to Springfield. You want a budget? Let's talk about a budget. Let us gather the money from the guys on LaSalle Street and let's have a financial transaction tax. And then when we get finished doing that, Mr. Governor, let's
All right, we're back. Thank you. Listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I've been talking about Governor Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, who has taken this, all these social programs, all of this stuff is being just ripped apart. The state is being ripped apart because we have a governor that just doesn't give a damn. He just doesn't. And I'm hearing now that he's been hiring. The state is broke, right? The state is broke. And this guy goes out and hires a staff member, chief of staff, for $100,000 a month. He hires people. And the state is broke while he cuts senior citizen meals, the senior program, disability, autism, daycare. But then he goes out and hires staff and gives them a six-figure salary when the state is broke. What the hell is that? That tells you a lot right there about what this guy is and what he is not. He's about hurting the poor. He's about hurting those who can barely take care of themselves. He is not paying his bills. This state is going to have a long way to go to try to get back up on its foot, get its footing back. There is no doubt about it. It's going to have to try and get its footing back. And it's going to take a while for that. It took him a year to destroy it. It's going to take years to try to get back on this foot again. And I'm just so pissed off. I can barely talk. I can barely say these things, you know, because this guy is deliberately ruining this state. And I'm so pissed off at the Democrats who are being bought off by this guy. Because he said at one time he wanted to make this a Republican state in 8 years. This jackass will not be in office in another year. If we can try to get him impeached, if we can get him recalled for not doing his damn job, wasting state money that we don't have, screwing programs and hiring useless staff members for six-figure salaries, and then he tries to defend that. You can't defend that after you just destroyed all these programs for these people out here. He's corrupt. He's straight up corrupt. He's just, I can't sit back or say nothing and let this guy destroy the state. It's already destroyed, but he's taking it down even further. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, and I am totally pissed. And it's just not going good, folks, not in the state of Illinois. You know, and if you look at Republican governors around the United States, around America, just about in every damn state where there is a Republican, it's chaos. And Illinois is no different. It is totally damn chaos. They are destroying the fiber of America. And then they get on television or they do shows and try to defend that, or they lie, they spin. Look at Scott Walker. The things that he's doing to Wisconsin. He didn't bust unions. He didn't bust them down to nothing. Now they're looking at, see, the one of the things you have to realize now, it's coming up on election time. It's coming up on time where we're going to have to get out here and vote for the president. And don't believe for one minute that the Republicans aren't trying to find a way to suppress the vote, to stop you and me from voting. They're trying to suppress the vote any way they can and trying to come up with legal ways of doing it, or either just unlawful ways of doing it. It doesn't matter. Or they're going to try and scare you into not voting, as they always try to do. Every damn time it's time for you and me to, they come up with ways to try to stop us from voting. Every state that holds a Republican governor, something. Look at Flint, Michigan, Rick Snyder, poisoned the damn water. People died, and now he's, you know, now they're sending bills around, want people to pay for this shit. Pardon my French. The people have been drinking poison water for a long time. And now they want them to pay for drinking and getting sick or dying poison water because a Republican governor trying to save money and killing people. This is horrible. We have to do something, people. We can change the way of this country. Get those jackass Republicans out of those governor's seats who are hurting their people. And they're coming up with ways to try to defend that. There is no defense. It's the strong, excuse me, it's the strong hurting the weak. That's all it is. Reverse Robin Hood. It's the strong hurting the weak. And that is so terrible. That's wrong. And but it's not going to stop. It's just going to get worse. This is why I say vote. You have to get excited. You've got to get up off your ass, get off the corner, put the cigarette down, put the beer down, get off those corners, and vote. Vote. We need it. We have to have it. Okay? All right. Thank you. right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. As you can probably tell, I'm having fun. I'm having a great time. And like once more, I want to thank my guest, author Captain Dan Willis. He's a TV personality. Oh, 90 seconds, okay. TV personality, MSNBC, Fox News. Wow, Fox News. Okay, MSNBC, Good Morning America. He's been all over the globe, and he has a new book. Check out his book. And it's just been great. It's been great. It's been wonderful. And we're just about off the air. We're just about off the air. And I've been, you know, bitching about Bruce Rauner of Illinois. I'm sorry if I remained too long on the topic of him. But we're in crisis here. The state is in a crisis. Schools are screwed up. People are being laid off, and they keep harping on the 5% economy jobs report. It ain't happening. If the economy jobs is at 5%, then that means the people who are holding jobs are probably working at part-time jobs, either the jobs that pay anything. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you guys join me. Join me tomorrow on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you are here. And make sure you share this show with everybody out there. Let them know about the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right. Goodbye, everybody. Hope to see you tomorrow. I almost forgot to get out there.